guess it's 10 a.m., so we'll go ahead and start the meeting. Oh, before we do, I should just check. We got your message via Janet. You'd like us to have either Kevin or I read the motion, and then you'll discuss the narrative from there?
I'll try.
Okay.
And if I don't have the paperwork in front of me, I'll let you know.
Okay, thanks. That's how we'll proceed then. Ready. Good morning. It is 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 2nd, 2008. We're in the North Dakota Public Service Commission.
Your internet's not on.
Oh, is the internet not on? Thanks, Dale.
Internet is not on.
All right, now it is.
5 years ago, you'd have never heard that.
Good morning. It's 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 2nd, 2008. We're in the North Dakota Public Service Commission hearing room. This is the North Dakota PSC. We have our regular biweekly commission meeting. This is Commissioner Tony Clark. I'm sitting in lieu of Commissioner Wiefald, who is joining us by phone today. I'll allow my fellow commissioners to introduce themselves.
Good morning. Kevin Kramer.
Good morning. This is Susan Wiefald, and I'm in Alpena, Michigan, attending a family reunion, so I'm happy to participate by phone.
Great. I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in
favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
We should note, well...
I can't hear whoever is asking for the
Gloria.
Call of the roll. So I don't know if her mic is on.
Okay, we've got it on now. For those listening in, I think we discussed a few weeks ago, Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco has moved over with the retirement of Bill Benick to be our general counsel, and our interim executive secretary is Gloria Geiger, who will be, I guess, appointed officially as interim executive secretary on one of the consent items on admin. So, Gloria, thank you for agreeing to fill in that role. We'll move to items in Commissioner Wiefald's portfolio. SW1 is the first one. I move the commission adopt the order granting certificate of public convenience and necessity for Otter Tail Corporation to construct and own a 48-megawatt portion of the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center in Barnes County, North Dakota, case number PU08200.
Second.
Susan?
Yes. This is a... Tony, go ahead, because I don't have the paperwork right here in front of me for this one.
Okay. This is just an approval of a certificate of public convenience and necessity. As you probably recall, we put this out for an opportunity a few weeks ago. I don't believe we received any comments at all. Jerry's shaking his head. No. Basically, what's happening is in the Ashtabula 200-megawatt project, which we have cited and is currently under construction that FPL Energy is building, there is an agreement that FPL struck with Otter Tail for Otter Tail to own and operate 48 megawatts of that 200-megawatt wind farm. Because it is an investor-owned utility extending its plant and service outside of city limits, public convenience and necessity is required. The commission looks at whether... the public convenience and necessity will be served by construction and ownership of the facilities and whether the applicant is fit, willing, and able to provide service. In this instance, it was fairly easy to determine that both of those standards were met, and this merely just approves that PCNN.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 SW2, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing the letter of intent and a siting application to one day, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 in case number PU08375 FPL Energy LLC's proposed 150-megawatt wind farm in Dickey County, North Dakota.
Second.
This is a can you hear me now?
Yep.
This is a very significant wind farm that's being proposed near Ellendale in Dickey County, North Dakota. It probably today, in today's news items, is being ignored a bit. It could be ignored a bit because of the 1,000-megawatt wind farm that we have that has also filed a letter of intent around the very same time. But this is a very significant event, this 150-megawatt wind farm that's proposed in Dickey County, North Dakota. This proposed project would be constructed on up to 20 square miles of leased private property approximately 15 miles northwest of Ellendale, North Dakota, and consists of up to 100 wind turbine generators, 5 or more permanent meteorological towers, access roads, underground and overhead collection lines, a 230-volt wind farm substation and transmission line near the existing 230-volt Ellendale substation and operations and maintenance facilities. And the proposed project would contribute up to 150 megawatts of renewable energy to the power grid. This proposed project from Florida Power and Light, Florida Power and Light Energy, LLC, is one of several that they have proposed here in North Dakota, and we'll look forward to receiving more information about this project as they file their application. We anticipate that this application would be filed sometime this fall.
The Commissioner Wiefold's right. It would be easy to perhaps have one eclipse another when you think about the next motion that'll be made. But really, the public's perception of what is a large wind farm, I think, may be changing in North Dakota Bay. I mean, you think about the size of the wind farms and the movement that's taken place over the last few years, and it's substantial. You know, we used to see an opening of, you know, maybe a proposed 20 megawatt wind farm, or even they'd have big ribbon cuttings for, you know, one turbine out on the interstate when this industry was just getting developed in the state, which was not long ago. It's easy to forget that this has only been about the last 5 or 6 years it's all of this has taken place. But nonetheless, 150 megawatts is a sizable wind farm. Certainly ranks in the top tier, at least, of existing wind farms that we have in the state, and the amount of investment that they're proposing, $300 million, is not a small amount of money by anyone's standards. So it'll be a project that I'm sure will be watched intently and participated in by many as we move through this particular siting process.
I've not talked to any of the folks down in Dickey County, but I suspect they're quite pleased by the fact that things are coming full circle. It's interesting that some of those early ribbon cuttings of 20 megawatt wind farms that were a really big deal and certainly still are kind of began down in that area, in that Ellendale Edgeley area, and in the meantime the entire state has become obviously an important participant in the development of wind energy. But it's nice to see this one come back around to where it all began in North Dakota.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 SW3, I move the commission acknowledge the I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent and assess a filing fee of $100,000 in case number PU08400 FPL Energy LLC's proposed 1,000 megawatt wind farm in Oliver County, North Dakota.
Second.
This is the project that has everyone talking in North Dakota. This proposed project would be constructed on up to 250 square miles of leased private property, approximately 6 miles northwest of Center, North Dakota, and actually it's northwest of Mandan is what I would describe the whole project, and consists of up to 667 wind turbine generators, 5 or more permanent meteorological towers, access roads, underground and overhead collection lines, a substation and operations and maintenance facility. And the proposed project would contribute up to 1,000 megawatts of renewable energy to the power grid. I did just a couple calculations on a piece of paper, and I figured that with 667 wind turbine generators, and let's say that an easement is paid, or not an easement, but a payment is made to the owners of the land who these turbines are placed on, and even if that payment per turbine was around $4,000, which I think is kind of an average amount these days, times 667 turbines, $2.668 million would be paid yearly to the landowners who have these turbines on their land each year for this wind farm. This just helps us appreciate the economic impact that not only this wind farm, but all of the wind farms in North Dakota are having on our economy and as a help to North Dakota landowners. This project is a very, very large wind farm. It could be the biggest in the country when it is built. I say could be because we know that there are other wind farms being announced across the country as well. But it certainly is a very, very large project, and they anticipate that they will be filing their application for this project sometime next summer.
I, for one, very much appreciate the fact that they didn't ask us to shorten the one-year waiting period to a day. Yeah. And clearly this is a multi-year project. You know, I might also add, with regard to the fiscal impact, this may be the greatest property tax relief program in the history of North Dakota, because the property taxes that are paid to local jurisdictions on these turbines is significant as well. And I'm sure will provide tremendous opportunity for the governments and the counties in which they exist.
Actually, I think it's only in Oliver County.
This one is, yes. Mm-hmm. Morton, part of Morton County.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 I was just thinking, it's not going to be any trouble to see the, assuming it moves forward, the turbines from the state capitol tower. And then I looked out the window today and I thought, well, I guess we wouldn't see them
today.
Fires keep burning up in Alberta. SW4 is our just fuel cost adjustments for our electric utilities. These are just public notices as opposed to anything else. Susan, do you want me just to read these?
Just read those. You could comment on the outer tail one, Tony, about how the
sure.
cost has gone down.
Yep. We'll start with NSP XL. And NSP has decreased its electric fuel cost adjustment by 0.326 cents per kilowatt hour from 1.872 cents per kilowatt hour. The resulting fuel adjustment for June is 1.546 cents per kilowatt hour. As a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical NSP residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours will decrease $2.45 for bills rendered during the month of June. MDU's fuel cost adjustment. MDU's has decreased its electric fuel cost adjustment by 0.489 cents per kilowatt hour from 1.142 cents per kilowatt hour. The resulting fuel cost adjustment for June is 0.653 cents per kilowatt hour. As a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical MDU residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month will decrease by $3.67 for bills rendered in the month of June. And Otter Tail. Otter Tail Corporation has decreased its electric fuel cost adjustment by 1.02 cents per kilowatt hour from 2.27 cents per kilowatt hour. The resulting fuel cost adjustment for the month of May is 1.25 cents per kWh. As a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical Otter Tail residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month will decrease by $7.65 for bills rendered in the month of June. June, I guess, wasn't overly hot, so I don't know if it'll tend to be an over 750 kilowatt hour per month type month or not. July has started off quite a bit hotter. The reason for Otter Tail's large decrease is this is the last month that, or we finally, let's put it this way, that bubble, the big stone bubble when that went down and market costs were so high is finally out of the fuel cost adjustment. The fuel cost adjustment is a four-month average, and finally December is out of there. So for bills that are reflected this month, it's January, February, March, and April, which was back when Big Stone was online. It's one of the things that the commission had talked about as we discuss the issue with those fuel costs that consumers saw over the winter. There was some thought about and some proposals to potentially drag out and spread out those costs that were incurred this winter for a greater amount of time. And the commission ultimately decided not to do that. I think one of the reasons was because we knew that if it wasn't paid for right away, what ends up happening is those costs then get pushed into the summer cooling season when folks are running their air conditioners, and by allowing that to go through a little bit more quickly, that bubble was worked out more quickly, and so now consumers will not be seeing the impact of that shutdown during the winter or during the summer cooling season. Aye.
Aye.
Oh, it's not a vote.
It's not
yep.
a vote. It's discussion.
Oh, yeah. We don't vote for these.
But if we had, it would have passed.
That was the sense of the commission vote. SW5. Oh, do I have a motion attached to this? I've got the paperwork, but not the motion.
I have it.
Do you? Okay.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Montana Dakota Utilities Company for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to own and operate a recovered energy generator and associated transmission facilities in Morton County, North Dakota, case number PU08358.
Second. This is a very interesting application. It's for approximately 7.5 megawatts. The location of this would be near Glen Ellen. It would be MDU is proposing a waste heat generator, which would be connected to the Northern Border Compressor Station. In our notice of opportunity for hearing, and we are only doing a notice of opportunity for this, not a notice of hearing, and that's because this is a relatively small project with 7.5 megawatts. The notice of opportunity states that people would have until August 8th to ask for a hearing. If anyone does ask for a hearing, then of course the commission will be holding a hearing on this matter. This particular type of project qualifies as a renewable resource under North Dakota law, and it's similar to one that, if anyone wants to take a look at a project and how it works, Basin has a waste heat generator located south of Mandan, that's also connected to the Northern Border Compressor Station. And so they could take a look at that particular project if they're interested in how this one will be operated.
All
favor?
Aye.
That ends the items in Commissioner Weifold's portfolio. We'll move to Commissioner Kramer.
Thanks. I move the commission adopt the order granting a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit in Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota, LLC's application to upgrade the existing pump station at Penn, North Dakota, case number PU07791.
Second.
This is the final part of the order on the Enbridge, North Dakota pipeline 10 pumping station upgrades, I guess. As you might recall, we noticed the opportunity for hearing in the first nine pumping stations, or actually of all 10 pumping stations earlier this year. We had a request for a formal hearing from a landowner at Penn whose home was within the avoidance area of the pumping station. In a previous order, we separated the Penn station out. In the previous order, we issued the permit for the other nine, I guess, and then scheduled a hearing for the 10th one. In the meantime, the homeowner and the company came to some sort of an agreement and then requested that the formal hearing be canceled. It was. We held an informal with the company, and everything seems to be in order. So hopefully with this order, we can close this one out and look forward to an extra 50,000 barrels per day or so going through, going from western North Dakota into to Minnesota and on to markets beyond.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 KC2. I move the commission adopt the fourth supplemental order in TransCanada Keystone Pipeline LP's application to construct and operate a 218-mile, 30-inch crude oil pipeline in Cavalier to Sargent Counties, North Dakota, granting TransCanada's request for additional temporary workspace at Shelter Belt Crossings, case number PU06421.
Second.
In the Keystone pipeline case, of course, as you know, that the pipeline is under construction. Both crews are out working. It came to the attention, of all of us when they got to Shelter Belt that the original order had provided for a 50-foot right-of-way through the Shelter Belt, which, as it turns out, is too narrow. And that doesn't surprise me because I think traditionally our right-of-way through Shelter Belts has been wider than that. So the company requested 15 extra feet of temporary workspace basically to accommodate the machine that carries the welding shack through the area. It actually requires more than 50 feet to get through. So it's really a safety issue as much as anything. The company has agreed by their initiation, by the way, to actually replant the trees that are cut out of the shelter belts at a rate of 5-to-1 as opposed to the 2-to-1 that is in the original order in the tree mitigation plan. So they're mitigating at a little more aggressive rate, which I appreciate that effort and that offer on their part. Just to put it all in context, however, 15 feet in a single-row shelter belt is about 3 to 5 trees. In a more of a multi-row shelter belt, it's 8 to 10 trees. So it's I think it was a pretty easy one in my mind to allow, and everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye. That ends items in my portfolio.
Moving to my portfolio, TC1, I move the Commission issue an order in case number GE08377 granting the request of Thompson USA Limited, East Grand Forks, Minnesota, to discontinue business at Colgate, North Dakota, effective July 1st, 2008.
Second.
This is a result of a request the Licensing Division received at this facility in Colgate. Thompson USA Limited will no longer license a facility for receiving any dry edible beans in North Dakota. It has no outstanding storage obligations. All dry edible bean purchases in North Dakota will be transacted under their roving grain buyer license, which was approved on this morning's consent agenda.
All in favor?
Aye.
TC2, I move the Commission issue an order case number GE08417, granting the request of St. Thomas Grain, Inc. to discontinue business at St. Thomas, North Dakota, effective July 1st, 2008.
Second.
Again, this is the result of a request received by the Licensing Division. The owner no longer wants to operate the elevator and hopes to sell it. There are no outstanding storage obligations.
All in favor?
Aye.
I didn't see items in my portfolio. Are there any questions?
I can't hear the question.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Thank you. How's your family reunion going?
It's going very well, thank you.
All right. That's good to hear. The Enbridge pipeline order,
yes.
Can you tell me where the other pumping stations are, please?
I certainly can. Trenton Station and Beaver Lodge Station in Williams County, Stanley Station and Blaisdell Station in Mount Trail County, the Minot Station in Ward County, Denby Station in McHenry County, Pleasant Lake Station in Benson County, Bartlett Station in Ramsey County, and Larimore Station in Grand Forks County.
And how is the pipeline capacity going to be increased once these, what is the pipeline's capacity presently?
It will increase, currently it's 110,000 barrels per day. It'll be increased to 161,000 barrels per day.
Do you have any idea when the project will be completed?
They expect to have it in service by December of 2009.
How much of a investment does this represent?
$120 million.
Can you give us some indication of how this increases the pressure within the line, and does it increase the possibility that the line could leak?
Well, I don't believe that it increases the possibility that the line will leak. The line has to be tested, obviously, before these upgrades can be made. You might recall this is really a second phase of a. That's really probably a fifth phase, but there was about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, we sited additional pumping stations on the Enbridge line, as well as some new line in a few places, some hydro testing to ensure that the pipeline could take more capacity. But it also includes dragging agents, for example, that make the oil easier to push through. It includes the infrastructure, obviously, the extra horsepower in the pumping stations. Some of these pumping stations that they're upgrading this year were actually new 2 years ago. In fact, I think the Penn Station might be one of those that was brand new 2 years ago. So we're talking about quite new infrastructure with a long-term plan in place to enhance the capacity. I would say, 2 to 3 years ago, the capacity of this pipeline was somewhere around 50,000 barrels per day, so it's seen some pretty dramatic growth in the last couple of years to meet the growing demand, obviously, of the oil production in western North Dakota and eastern Montana.
The Otter Tail fuel cost adjustment. So all of the, just so I make sure that I understand, all of the consequences of the Big Stone shutdown have now essentially washed through the purchase gas adjustment or the purchase fuel adjustment?
That's correct.
Okay. So if
purchases, Dale, were made in December on the open market, and this is the first month that December is out of the equation.
So all of those spot market purchases were made in December?
That was the last month they would have been made.
Okay. And what period of time does this fuel cost adjustment include, please?
January through April, those 4 months.
I was thinking about this the other day, and I really couldn't. Well, let me just put it this way. Is the 1,000-megawatt wind farm, aside from the Great Plains Synfuels plant, is it the largest construction project in the history of North Dakota?
Wow. It very well might be, but I don't know. I'll tell you this much. I spent 4 years as economic development director, and if we'd had an investment like this in anything, it would have been the biggest day of my career. So I don't recall any investments this large, but I wouldn't dare say for sure that it is, because I'd be proven wrong as quickly as I said it, probably.
We would have to take a look at, for example, in today's dollars, how it compares to the projects that were built in the 1980s, for whether it's the Synfuels plant or the plant up at Washburn.
Well, even I don't know if you'd include like construction of interstate highways or the Garrison Dam or it's big by any standard.
I mean, could you just talk about how this relates in terms of, frankly, large construction projects in North Dakota?
Well, I've used the example before of in trying to get a handle on the scope of the size of the budget for this is to try to compare it to the general fund of North Dakota. You think of all the sales taxes that are raised and income taxes, corporate income taxes that are raised in a biennium, and I mean, this project, and then you add to it the $300 million project down in Ellendale, is almost the equivalent of 2 years worth of general fund spending for the entire state of North Dakota. It's a massive project. I mean, I'm in government, so that was kind of the easiest way for me to try to get a handle on exactly how much money that we're talking about here. But you know, even if you look nationwide, and as Commissioner Wiefold indicated, this if it isn't going to be the biggest wind farm when it's put in service, it will most certainly be one of the biggest wind farms in the nation. I would put it on a worldwide scale. This will be one of the largest, if it goes all the way through to fruition, it will be one of the largest wind farms on the face of the earth. And I think it indicates the seriousness towards which wind is receiving attention right now. When you have companies that are large enough to be able to leverage and bring in upwards of $2 billion of investment into a wind farm, I think it shows you that as a technology, it has matured and reached the prime time.
I would also say that when you consider the company, the size and the prestige of an FPL Energy committing to over $2 billion of investment in North Dakota, when they have many other places they could be making those investments, it speaks something to the climate of North Dakota, not just the weather climate either, but to the business climate as well. But it also does cause one to ponder, certainly, just what kind of a test this will be for North Dakotans' tolerance of this level of intrusion. You know, it's one thing to champion and to cheerlead for large investment. It is our job, of course, to ensure that these investments are done in a way that has minimal adverse impact on our cultural resources, our environment, and certainly on the people of North Dakota. There is no way that 667 turbines won't have some impact, and certainly there is some favorable economic impact, but this will be an intrusion on the landscape, and I believe it will be a test of just how much of this type of investment North Dakotans are willing to tolerate. And I don't know what the answer to that is right now.
This is a huge project as far as land mass 250 square miles of leased private property. When you look at the map and you see the amount of land that this is going to cover, I hope that that map will be published in some public publication in North Dakota. Of course, we have to do it when we put it in the public announcements, but this is a tremendous amount of land that's going to be impacted by this project. And also, when you talk about impact, as I talked earlier, the fact that landowners could receive around $2.6 million a year as a result of this project, I don't know that any other project, energy project in the state has would provide this much income to individual landowners whose land these turbines are on, or whether there would be a project where you have pipelines, et cetera. This project really has a lot of economic impact for landowners.
And just to continue Commissioner Clark's government illustration, it takes Congress at least 5-10 minutes to spend $1 billion.
You touched on this.
This isn't as big as the mortgage bailout. I mean, we're not talking that big.
You touched on this a moment ago, but, I mean, could this project represent, I mean, we've seen this in ethanol, maybe not necessarily in North Dakota, but elsewhere, but could this represent the beginning of the backlash against wind power if you have almost 700 towers in all over in a discrete area of North Dakota? It's like people will quit saying, well, this is great, clean, renewable energy, and start saying this is ruining my view, or this is killing too many birds, or this is, or this that truck carrying that propeller almost ran me off the road, that kind of thing.
Well, I don't know about those specific examples, Dale, but I do think that it, as I said, I mean, I think it will be a test to the tolerance the North Dakotans have for this type of intrusion on the landscape. And I don't say that negatively. I mean, it's just that you clearly aren't going to hide 700 wind turbines. It will have an impact on the viewshed, and it changes the landscape. And like I said, this will be, in my mind, the ultimate test of whether we want to continue this kind of investment or not. I will say this. I don't think that, as far as wind power, you know, being wonderful goes, I don't know that it changes that. It's obviously it'll have more of an impact on the people that will see it every day, and not so much on the people who enjoy the electricity from it on the other end. I don't necessarily connect the two. I'll tell you this much: if it was a 1,000 megawatt coal-fired power plant or a nuclear plant, it would get a lot of attention. But this not in my backyard scenario that you talk about. Obviously, it wouldn't be the first place it happens. This has been happening in a lot of other places. I mean, Ted Kennedy didn't want wind turbines near his Cape home either. So it wouldn't be the first time.
It's ironic.
When,
I was seeing
people have been taking a look at this project, I know, to see how it might impact future coal development in the state as well, because we have a number of major coal mines in West River, North Dakota, in those same general vicinities. And just you can see that you could not. It's different than when you put a pipeline through a wind farm or vice versa. But you cannot mine coal and have a wind turbines in the same location. So I'm sure that the folks who are planning coal development at the state also are looking very carefully at this wind development project to see if it there's any. Any problems with what they have planned for the future development of coal mining?
Certainly want to encourage coordination between the various companies, obviously. And I know a fair number of these turbines will be on reclaimed land, so that's value added.
But it was interesting you mentioned the Kennedy clan. It was an interview, I think, on Larry King a few nights ago that I didn't see, but I read the transcript of, and it was an energy executive and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. were on, and RFK Jr. was saying that we could get all our power just from wind generators in, I think he named three or four states, North Dakota, Kansas, and Texas. Now, of course, that example is overblown because the wind doesn't always blow all the time in all three of those states, even though we are fairly windy. But I thought, yeah, well, that's all well and good, but you didn't want any off Hyannisport either, buddy. Yeah.
That pun was not intentional, was it? Overblown?
Overblown.
Yes.
Only Dave can do that sort of thing. The Dickey County project, are any of these turbines in Spring Valley Township?
I believe, Dale, I think there are a couple, actually. And I don't, I heard that, and I don't even remember where I heard that, because that question came up in some conversation somewhere, and I thought somebody on our staff said they thought it was, but.
I don't know.
I don't know for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I don't think our map.
The map doesn't,
show it.
And just so that I'm clear, the Dickey County project asked for the waiting period to be reduced to a day.
It did.
And that's because the standard waiting period is for 1 year, and my understanding is that they're planning to file an application this fall. And so rather than asking us to waive it for a different amount of time, they're just asking us to waive it for 1 day so they have the ability to file this application any time in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the application itself didn't request 1 day. They just noted that the application just asked us to shorten the time frame, but had indicated that they would be filing on or about October 1st. For our purposes, it as long as we know about it, it really doesn't matter if it's 1 day or if we set it in September. So just because that's the way we've been writing our motions, we did it that way.
And the Oliver County project did not request a shortened time.
No.
And you did not grant one. Okay. Can you tell me when the filing fees are due? Have they already been paid?
Filing fees are due upon full and complete
application.
Okay. They haven't been paid yet.
No.
What are the filing fees?
$100,000 each.
Okay.
The max.
Can you describe this MDU project, please? This
waste heat
compressor. Well, at least, yeah, go ahead, Susan.
Yes, this is, it connects to a Northern Border compressor station. And, Dale, the best thing I can tell you is to go take a look at the one that's south of Mandan. That's connected to a Northern Border compressor station that's owned by Basin. They dedicated that one, and it was for 5 megawatts about a year ago. And I went down to that dedication. It does take us a pretty good sized facility to convert this waste heat into electricity. But basically, what it's doing is taking waste heat from the Northern Border Pipeline compressor station and converting that into electricity. And so although it's not what some people would consider a renewable resource, it's taking something that's just being wasted right now and turning it into electricity. I see a lot of potential for this. If you had, there's a lot of compressor stations along these pipeline stations, along the pipeline, and if you were to convert the waste heat at each one of these compressor stations into electricity, you could generate quite a bit of electricity. And the price is comparable to other types of energy development that we're seeing right now, whether it's for renewables or for coal generation, et cetera, in our state.
I actually think that this whole issue of using waste heat, not just necessarily with compressor stations, but in other applications such as the ethanol plant or the Spiritwood Energy Park complex, which is being built, is one of the more interesting and innovative and really useful ways to try to get more efficiency out of our energy system, generally speaking. Because, I mean, energy is, the creation of electricity is tremendously wasteful, if you want to term it that way, to the degree that it just throws off waste heat. I mean, the business of producing electricity is really the business of thermodynamics, and a tremendous amount of heat is thrown off. And if you can harness that and use it for some other application, that's the best kind of efficiency of all, because it's taking a resource that's already being expended and getting extra value out of it. It's really value-added energy. It's value-added electricity.
It's more I think of it as more value-added than renewable, but it's nice that it's considered a renewable resource. It's interesting to note, too, you know, when we're talking about the scale of things and the sort of the romance that centers around wind development as an example. This is, what would this be, 5 wind turbines, 5 GE 1.5 megawatt wind turbines, which, you know, it's kind of intriguing when you start putting it all together. And
actually, it doesn't have to stop. It generates electricity on continuously.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, it's really got greater value that way.
Right.
The other thing about it is when you piece together 5 megawatts and 7.5 megawatts in these small pieces, whether it's from compressor stations or wherever, those are nice little amounts that can fit onto the existing transmission capacity as well and helps add value to that infrastructure as well.
So the energy that's generated by this waste heat facility is just going to be fed into the General Electric grid? It isn't?
It's built by MDU. It's going to be used by MDU customers.
Okay. It's not going to be used strictly to power the compressor station?
Oh, no. No, this is going to be,
they've got an existing line there.
Yeah, this is waste heat that is going to generate 7.5 additional megawatts of electricity for MDU customers.
And the compressor station, I presume it's a natural gas pipeline?
That's correct.
And the compressor station's purpose is to compress the gas in the pipeline so you can get more gas in it?
Force it through.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Keep the pressure up.
And the waste heat, just so that I'm clear, the waste heat is generated by the operation of the compressor station?
That's correct.
Can you describe how large the compressor station is?
Yes. Now, Jerry, is Jerry sitting there?
He is.
Well, I went down to visit this facility, and so I'm just trying to remember, but I would say 100 foot square. But I'm not going to be, I want the staff to check with MDU on that.
Yeah, I'd have to rely on what Susan says because I haven't been to the site.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I was thinking an acre or more. I mean,
it would be a gas-fired compressor giving off heat from burning the gas.
I have one off-the-wall question. Just thinking about the 1,000 megawatts of wind and the 150 megawatts of wind, the 7-plus megawatts for this, have we reached a point where the capacity on the grid has been reached, or are they going to have to build more facilities to take this new power in?
This particular facility, Dave, my understanding is it would hook into the DC line that's presently in existence between to go from
center.
Ground center to Duluth, and that's the line that's going to carry this power.
This project
is going to need to be done in conjunction with building a new 345 kV line, and that would take the coal power to the Red River Valley. That's my understanding of this, that this new project would tie in with the announcement we've had from Minnesota and Minkota about transfers of ownership of the DC line Minnesota Power.
And then to supplement or to replace that line for Minkota. Minkota will be building a new 345 kV line to its customers.
The commission has scheduled a meeting to meet with Minnesota Power, and I don't have the date of that meeting right in front of me. Does anyone else? Because I think that's when they're going to be explaining kind of the whole project to the commission.
July 15th.
July 15th.
You know what time?
Is it 10 a.m.?
I'll tell you in a minute.
Here in this hallowed place. Yeah.
It's going to be here in
10 a.m.
in Bismarck.
It says 10 a.m.
Yeah.
It's at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
It'll be adjacent to the Thompson Wetzel audio cabinet. Dave, to answer your broader question about transmission capacity generally, I think you've probably hit the nail right on the head. We may be getting to the point where it's like getting to squeeze blood out of a turnip as far as transmission. I mean, in order for large new projects to get hooked up in some fashion or another, there's just going to have to be more transmission built out and around North Dakota. And we've seen a number of those projects be announced, whether it's the DC line and building new lines for other types of facilities, or whether it's the CapEx 2020 project in Minnesota, or a number of other projects. We are at that point where, outside of projects that you can fit here and there on the grid in little pockets, not just within this region but nationwide, it's pretty clear that there has to be more investment into transmission. I just saw an interesting article reporting on the Western Governors Association meeting in Wyoming where just this very point was brought up. And it's even being raised in the context of not wanting to use fuels to transport electricity, because let's remember that whether you're putting coal on a train and shipping it 1,000 miles or whether you're building a transmission line, it's all just the same, you know, different ways to achieve the same goal, which is to get electricity from one spot to another. And from a standpoint of not using certain precious natural resources like diesel fuel and other ways of transporting the fuel itself, it seems to make sense to build transmission lines and instead get the energy there by wire as opposed to via rail or truck or other more fossil even, fuel mechanisms.
Yeah. Or even pumping natural gas through long pipelines to...
Right.
The PCNN for Otter Tail's portion of the Ashtabula Wind Farm, does this allow for, is it fair to say this allows for the transfer of ownership from FPL to Otter Tail?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's been consistent. That's similar to what they did up at the Langdon Wind Farm as well. Otter Tail takes a... First, they cite it as one wind farm, which we appreciate, and then transfer that portion of ownership that Otter Tail wishes to use and take advantage of and get the benefits of.
Okay, are we done?
Do you know how much it costs to build? There's 10 of the pump stations being upgraded. Do you know how much the expense is per station?
I'm going to say it would seem to me it'd be about $12 million, but I don't know that for a fact, because each one's a little bit different, although not a lot. There are similar characteristics to all of them, but in one case it might be a 200 horsepower extra motor, in another case it might be two 200 horsepower motors. They all seem to have drag reducing agents and skids to, you know, that are used to inject the agent, but I don't know if it's fair to just divide by 10.
As far as KC2, the greater workspace,
yes.
and you mentioned that the company is going to plant 5 trees for every one cut down instead of 2 for every
yes.
one. Yes. Do you happen to know if TransCanada gets any sort of tax break or carbon credit or whatever from planting
trees?
Extra trees?
I have no idea whether they do or they do not, but it is funny that you bring up the issue of carbon credit, because quite honestly, this is really getting into another topic, but when we start talking about mitigating carbon and really adding to the cost of emitting carbon so that certain fuels are uneconomical, to me, what we really ought to be doing is literally trying to reduce carbon, and planting trees is one of those ways to do it. So I don't know, but I have no idea whether there's anything in it, if you will, for TransCanada or not. I guess what I somewhat suspect is, that this has been a long project and they wanted to move this thing along, so they initiated this offer to actually go beyond the tree mitigation plan, and I appreciate it.
Sell Terra passes for it.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me because there have been statements made recently in the presidential campaign about the desire or the undesirability of importing oil from Canada.
Yeah.
Calling it dirty oil and that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's amazing that oil from Canada is dirtier than oil from, say, Saudi Arabia or Venezuela.
Like Freedom Oil.
Yeah. It's Susan. It's a long weekend, and these guys have a lot of time to space
I
to fill.
See that.
We're just trying to keep you away from your
family. How is the weather in Alpena, by the way?
Actually, it's very nice. I'm missing a hike too.
Oh no!
Oh no! It's a great spot. My grandmother's hometown is Alpena.
This is when a cell phone would come in handy, Susan.
Actually, I checked on that, but there's no wireless coverage out in the woods.
That makes it all the better. I not for us, but for you. I asked my... I remember one time... when my friend Dale was going on a hike in Canada, I said, will you get cell phone coverage there? He said, I hope not.
Yeah, but just put a satellite phone in his hand. He'll be good to go.
All right. We'll close the meeting and be back in 5 minutes for the administrative portion of the agenda. Thank you.
Have fun, Susan.
Listen, I have a suggestion.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is on the admin. Could we do the scheduling matters first? I don't know if
sure.
there are that many things. If you'll just run through the agenda items on the admin, I don't know whether I need to stay on the phone with those. All right?
Okay. Why don't we we should get on the record. Do you authorize someone to sign your name?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much.
Okay. So, Janet, it's okay?
Mm-hmm. That would be good.
Okay. Well, should we do scheduling right now, or do you want to call back in 5 minutes?
Call back in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Susan, just for your information, though, the discussion, there are only three discussion items. One is the Quest PAP.
Right.
And then one is the proposed letter to Xcel regarding the meter malfunctions.
Yes.
And then the third is how we might participate in the Altel-Verizon merger.
Right. And so I'm fine with all of those.
Okay.
All right. So if you want to do scheduling right now, that would be helpful.
I think there's no reason not to.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just going to go grab my...
Okay.
She like